Yes. Where's my X-Men board game? Is there a good one? There's probably not.
X-Men Mutant Insurrection.
Yeah, I looked up X-Men board games and there's a lot. There's an Uno X-Men. Doesn't really count.
Udo X-Men.
Uno X-Men, Marvel Crisis Protocol, which a friend is really trying to get me into. Apparently the X-Men are really good in that game. But there's like not much else that's recent.
Oh, the dogs are mad. I'm sorry.
I mean, this Mutant Insurrection is from 2021. Looks modern enough.
We gotta.
Yeah, it's got a little blackbird.
Yeah.
Can I play as Cyclops?
I think
He's on
so.
the cover.
Okay.
Yeah, he is on the cover.
We've got all the guys on the cover. Like
All the dudes.
all the
Yes.
dudes are here.
The boys are back in town.
Who are we missing? There's someone that we're missing though. I'm looking at this cover and I'm like, wait a minute.
What
Oh, there's no Gambit.
There is no Gambit.
Let me see this game.
Oh, look at these minis. There's Magic. That's a plus.
Xavier does not look good in this game.
And no. He looks
Oh
very
my God, what
bad.
did they do to him?
His eyebrows are like way too dark, and why he's got a big old head like floating behind him.
It's like projecting it from his wheelchair.
When
It
you
looks like he farted a projection of himself.
Yeah.
Like it's coming from his underside.
We need Nightcrawler on the cover. That's who we're missing.
Oh yes, we're missing him
Yes.
too.
We're missing Nightcrawler, we're missing Kitty.
She's in the game. Like there's a
Yeah,
mini of
I'm
her.
seeing like Cable. Yeah, I don't know. This looks fun.
Yeah,
This
it's
looks.
got a what is it? 6.6 on Board Game Geek, which is, about average, not too terrible.
I was gonna say this looks like a game I would play maybe a couple of times and then not sure if I would pick it back up.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I would play it.
Yeah, I would too.
We'll do it for the podcast.
Somehow.
I bet we can like get a what's it called? The virtual tabletop thingy.
Oh, Tabletop Simulator?
A tabletop simulator version of it.
Yeah, I'm sure we could.
There's gotta be.
Yeah.
There's gotta be. There's so much on there.
All right, we should what
Start.
time? What time do you want to clap?
Yeah, I need to stop looking at this. At 15?
15, okay. Hello, and welcome to an episode of Study of X, the bi-weekly X-Men podcast where we discuss the Krakoa era of X-Men comics. Yep, my name is Tim, and I am your host, and with me, as always, is Chris.
You know, I was gonna have a joke in here about the mini we were looking at for an X-Men board game, where it's just Professor Xavier in his wheelchair and then a really big version of his head floating above him. But I don't know what to say about it other than that, because that's the joke, is the mini.
It's very fair.
We'll add it to the notes.
Oh, absolutely.
Xavier is a joke. And
Yes.
also, Sergio.
Hello. Hi.
Yeah.
It is the third time in a row you say this is a podcast about
I know,
X-Men
I know, I
podcast. I was
know, I
going to call
know.
it out. I'm sorry.
I'm so tired today. One of these days I'm gonna get this right again, but it's not today.
You need
You
to
know
write
what?
this
That's
stuff
okay.
down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Writing stuff down is for cowards.
You know what? Don't you disrespect me in my copious amounts of notes that I take for these comics.
Copious notes.
Copious. I am at a lot of pages, far too many. But that's okay. I do it because it's fun.
It is the stuff that holds us together.
Yeah.
That's what
That
I
and
like to believe.
friendship.
Yes. Not the X-Men. It's not that.
Our hatred for Xavier, maybe.
Yes. That one's a pretty strong glue, to be fair.
But yeah, we got
All right.
some we got a couple giant size issues this week as we kind of finish off that little arc before going into an issue of X-Force. So yeah, want to get started? I feel like these kind of link together pretty nicely here. At least the giant size ones do.
Yeah, they do, which is very, very nice.
And unusual for the giant size stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, I was, again, still looking into this stuff because finding interviews with Hickman and everybody can be pretty hit or miss. But for the fact that these two giant size actually work together so well kind of points to him and how well he could tie them together. Because in an interview with AIPT Comics, he said that he basically gave the artists whoever they wanted to write for, and then he had to find the through line for it. So the fact that these two work together, good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like 3/4 through this first issue, and I went, oh, I guess this has something to do with something we've seen before, after all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of definitely starts off picking up a story piece that has not been touched on in Krakoa so far.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the introduction.
I do too. I really like it. But let's roll into it. So this first one we're going to cover is Giant Size X-Men Phantom X, titled The World. This one was released in August of 2020 and is written both by Jonathan Hickman and the artist Rod Reese. Reese is a Brazilian artist who does a lot of work on comic book covers, not so much on the inner workings of comics themselves. So this one's a bit of a standout. We might also recognize his art from the New Mutant covers that we have been reading. That is the same artist. He's worked on both.
Okay.
Yeah. And he has also done work on Star Wars, Venom, Doctor Strange, Batman, and much more for both Marvel and DC. So he's a pretty prolific artist.
He's got a pretty cool, unique style. It's instantly like recognizable.
Yeah, I like this issue's art a lot. We'll get into that in a little bit here, but yeah, it's good stuff. It's very interesting.
Definite standout.
Yeah, our first appearance in this era of Phantom X as well.
Yes, which I wanted...
Sorry, just real quick, Sergio, just seeing this cover, what did you think of Phantom X before you cracked this book open?
I said, oh, this is a Deadpool.
You know.
You know what? That's a really good take to get from this guy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just for a little context.
I still think that is the case.
Yeah, that's very fair. Just to give you some context, just for people listening, this first issue, the cover of it is a dude just dressed in all white, just mask over his face, only showing eyes, and pointing two pistols like at the viewer, like almost like 3D sticking out of the like the cover. Uh-huh. It's pretty good, but yeah, I can see why you would see this and think Deadpool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even as we read it, he would fall under Merc with a Mouth because he is very sarcastic and kind of sassy.
Yeah.
Not really fourth wall breaking like Deadpool, but I can see why I come to the same conclusion.
Yeah, so what did you learn about Phantom X?
So, Phantom X was first introduced in New X-Men number 128 in 2002. It was created by Grant Morrison, and I have come to learn that he is a huge fan favorite character that was created by Morrison. People really, really like this guy. His name is Charlie Cluster 7, also goes by Phantom X, and he was a product of the Weapon Plus program, which, if that sounds kind of familiar, that's because it is the U.S. program that was born out of the one that made Captain America, and has ties with the Weapon X program of Canada that made Wolverine. So they're almost like sister programs. He is officially titled Weapon 13, and he was born in the world to become a mutant-hunting super soldier. What is the world? We're going to learn pretty soon, because I think the comic actually explains it very, very well. The only other stuff that you really have to know about him is his physiology is enhanced by Sentinel-grade technology, so his reflexes are faster, he's a bit stronger, smarter, so on and so forth.
Is he a mutant?
It's up for debate. Sometimes he says he is, sometimes he says he's not. But the thing is he's very good at misdirection, and he is known as being a liar. So if he is a mutant and he said he was, maybe he was lying about it, maybe he wasn't. Shrug?
Okay.
Yeah, this does not hint at him being a mutant at all.
No, yeah. Here, the impression I got from these issues was that he's not.
If anything, I think he's meant to be an anti-mutant weapon. But yeah, I didn't pick up on anything that would point towards him being a mutant. I guess, he might have alluded to it in another issue or something, but
yeah.
At least in this one, he does not seem to be one.
Yeah, he alludes to it in other ones. Big, very popular comic he was a part of for a long time was X-Force, which is where he referenced himself as being a mutant. He's also been a part of the X-Men before. So he's worked a lot with mutants, and that's usually the circles he hangs out around. But he's still kind of in that gray area like Deadpool is, where it's like, maybe not. Depends on the story.
One of the last appearances, I think his actual last appearance before this issue, was he was in a X-Men team where they revived Charles Xavier from the dead. Xavier actually took his body for that.
I debated putting that in here or not, because it's a really fun little fact. The Xavier we see in House and Powers of X, as well as the early beginnings of the Krakoan era, is actually Phantom X's body with Charles Xavier's mind in him.
Yeah, and then it stops being that because Charles dies.
Yes, and comes back to life. Huh. And according to Hickman, in the same AIPT Comics interview I mentioned, apparently once Xavier died and then got resurrected, they've been drawing him slightly thinner to show that there is a difference. But, functionally it was Charles Xavier both times. It's just one time it was Phantom X's body.
Yeah. How did Phantom X become alive again? Who knows? But, well...
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah.
Can't answer that one.
But yeah, let's get into this.
Yeah, so that is this character that we are going to be focusing on for this entire issue. And we're going to open up with, I believe, to be his origins. I'm not 100% sure because it's not super clear.
Yeah,
this
is kind of what you just said in terms of what his origin is.
Yeah, so I have to assume this is it. And I feel like it makes sense for the rest of the comic, this being the origin.
Yeah.
Same, but there's enough of it there that I'm like, it could be something different. But we are opening on a mad science lab where a bunch of scientists who are not named but do hint at being part of Advanced Ideas, which is AIM, who's a pretty common X-Men villain. If you've seen anyone in yellow hazmat suits as enemies, that's AIM. But they are working here to try and create a production line for research on metahumanity. And by doing this, they take a chromosome, or a bunch of DNA, basically, on one person, and they change one chromosome at a time, and then see what happens with the baby. So you have a production line of a bunch of babies being grown really fast in vats, and then checked to see how they're doing.
This is an extremely inefficient way of going about this.
Yeah.
Just changing one chromosome at a time?
Yes.
That's not how this works.
No, not at all. But that's how they've decided to do it.
They seem to be replacing bases, bases on the and DNA on the panel. I don't think those are chromosomes.
No, I don't think so either, but that's what the text says. It probably just looks cooler if they do it this way.
Anyway, you're going to need a lot of babies if you're only changing one base at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, yeah. It is like a conveyor belt of babies, so,
Which, if they keep a baby, they stamp it with a circle on its forehead, and if the baby's not good, they stamp it with a diamond.
Yeah.
How many scientists, like PhDs, people that have years of study under them, do you think are employed here just stamping babies with a circle on their forehead?
Oh yeah. AIM hires a lot. It's wild how they just do the, I don't know. It's just a collection of just mad scientists, basically.
Yeah. I want to see a story about like the academia to mad science lab pipelines.
Me too. There's an AIM character we're going to meet later, and I would love to see his life story.
This kind of gets referenced a lot in like earlier Hickman stuff, like Hickman's Adventures and whatnot. I remember like they do a crazy experiment on one dude and then like give him shit for being from like MIT or something.
That's amazing.
Hmm.
So
there would be a like inner university fighting in AIM, and an evil scientist one be like, ugh, you went to Berkeley?
Like, oh, Harvard, huh? The dregs.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would love to see that, because that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because these guys, as awful as this is of a baby conveyor belt, it's very silly.
Yeah.
It is very silly.
They're doing evil science because, as I said, they're researching meta-humanity. They want to understand more about it, what changes with a person when you change, you know, part of their chromosomes, apparently. And they're doing this, as they're doing this, and a new recruit is being shown around, they find that two of the babies are born the exact same, which is a huge statistical anomaly and should not be possible. But instead of researching this further, they don't need any of that are the exact same, so one is discarded and one is saved.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And this is implied later, as I agree with both of you, that one of this is Phantom X, the other is another character we will meet later.
Yeah.
Yep.
So then we flash forward a decade later, and we see Phantom X as a grown adult for the first time, and he has a hat.
He does?
Yes. He's got a beret that clashes with the rest of his pure white outfit, but that's okay. Because I think it's a vibe for him.
Yeah. And
I think it's the best outfit he's got in the entire issue.
Yeah, I agree. This one is very good.
It's a good one. I like when he gets the like blue-black lines and everything on his suit, but that's just me.
Anyway, you can kind of guess this is probably around the 40s or the 50s because he is with the Howling Commandos.
Yes. This is before they're fully the Howling Commandos. If you don't know who that is the group that Captain America runs with in World War I. That these are basically everybody here is from the Howling Commandos.
World War II, I think, is.
Did I say? Yes, I did say World War I.
Yeah.
World War II.
Yeah.
That was my bad.
Same thing, you know, just slight difference.
Yeah, just, you know, a little bit, just a little bit later. Yeah. You know.
but yeah, this is like, we got Nick Fury here, we got Dum Dum Dugan. The whole gang.
Yep, and Phantom X has hired them to break into something called the World. And this is in return for someone owing him a favor. This place, as he is going to explain to all of them, is a world within a world where everything that happens inside is outside time and place of everything else around it. So, if you think of like a hyperbolic time chamber from Dragon Ball Z, roughly the same idea, but much, much bigger. So everything that happens in here happens on a vastly different timescale than everything outside of it.
Just a small note. I like the fact that they are not able to place his accent. It's vaguely European.
Yes, yeah. Which is also commented on a lot, apparently from the original X-Force run that he's a part of. Because he's from the world. He just really likes the French, and so he will take different dialects from that area and try them out.
Oh, okay.
That's just his thing. So the fact that they can't place it, it makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going in.
Yeah.
Looks cool.
Yeah, looks very cool. Everything outside of it is kind of muted in color. A lot of grays, a lot of light browns and everything. And once you get into the world, there's a lot of oranges, purples. Everything is very, very bright here. Just to really give you the idea that this place is somewhere different. And we're going to see how different, because as Phantom X kind of puts it, a lot of evil science happens here. Like, a lot.
There is a Hickman mini he did called Shield, where there is a city underneath, like, Rome. Like, an underground city where people like Leonardo da Vinci and Sir Isaac Newton have just managed to live forever down there, and they're just kind of doing stuff. This city looks a lot like that. It's not that, but I really wonder if the intention was to kind of invoke that.
Yeah, I really like the like hyper saturated colors. It makes it look like otherworldly, like less real.
Mm-hmm.
And the appearance of the like robots and other creatures that show up is also very like unreal, like it looks like a hallucination or a dream, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and as we keep going with this, the things that show up almost remind me of something like a child would come up with, which I think plays into part of the story that is not said directly. As the Howling Commandos and Phantom X make their way into the world, they notice how quiet it is until, as Sergio mentioned, a bunch of robots start fighting them. The Howling Commandos debate running until Phantom X says, "Hey, you did your job. You're a distraction. You guys can leave if you want. I have to go deeper in and go do something." And that's exactly what he does. He leaves them, fights his way higher up onto a tower, finds a pterodactyl. Just kind of there. Before flying off and meeting a young boy on one of the destroyed buildings, and asks the young boy if he wants to leave yet, to which the young child says, "No, not yet."
Yeah. Also, just to kind of put into perspective how fast this goes, Phantom X arrives in the city with the Howling Commandos, and the next page they're attacked.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost it's immediately once they enter the city.
Yep. And to emphasize what Chris was saying about the robots, they look like robots that have had, like, the googly eyes.
Yeah.
Stuck on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of them has three, one of them has nine.
Yeah, there's one of the ones that's attacking him as he's, like, going up the stair. Just, it looks like a big googly eye.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and they're not uniform.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't some production line making them. They're all almost individual.
Yeah, one's got, like, a grill.
I also like the pterodactyl.
Yeah, same.
Good friend.
I also really like the pterodactyl, which does not seem to be a robot. It seems to be flesh and blood, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
There's just dinosaurs hanging out here.
Distinctly organic.
Yeah. So, 10 years later, we're at the Hellfire Club.
Before we actually move on to the Hellfire Club, I do want to mention, as Phantom X drops off the pterodactyl to talk to this young boy, he does mention how odd it is that the world does move at a different time scale. So even though he's back here and he should know that the young boy he's meeting is still a child, it's still a weird situation for him, which I kind of agree, you know, does lead more to the fact that those two twins from earlier are probably Phantom X and this boy here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it in question.
I don't think it's being subtle about it. Like, it's them.
Yeah. So a decade later.
Yep. We have Phantom X hiring an older version of the Hellfire Club, with our good friend Sebastian Shaw and some of his old buddies here, hanging out and looking posh and awful as always.
Oh yeah, we got Donald Pierce here. It's all the legends. This is what the Hellfire Club did beforehand.
Mm-hmm. And Phantom X is offering them the looting rights to the world if they help him break back into it. Plus also Phantom X gets club rights if he wants them, But that's just more of like a side thing they'll figure out later.
Yeah.
So, but they very quickly make it back to the world. And again, we still have that very highly saturated look about the entire place. And as they walk in, and Shaw mentioned how, you know, not terrifying the place seems to be, as it is very quiet, they do very quickly get attacked again. But instead of just robots, we have a very large octopus Cthulhu monster. We have an ape wearing a spaceman helmet and I think a jetpack. And, you know, giant robots that look like they were taken from 1920s, 1930s robot toys and just made really big.
Yeah, this is just the Iron Giant with like a big green drone on top.
Yeah, and this is where it starts to really feel like a child is in charge of making all these monstrous defenses, because these all feel like monsters in, you know, things that a child would come up with.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But yeah, they are attacked and Phantom X runs off again.
Yes, and Shaw tells him, hey, we're getting out of here. This place sucks. We do not want the looting rights anymore. We're just gonna leave.
Yeah, so Phantom X kind of bounds off, and it does this neat thing where it, like, turns upside down as he's moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of, like, following a rock path that breaks gravity and spirals upside down. And the panels themselves just kind of turn as he's turning, but it doesn't turn the page itself. So by the time he gets to the young man that he's talking to, he and the young man are both upside down, and their dialogue is also upside down.
Yeah. Just cool looking. But yeah, they seem about the same age now.
Mm-hmm. And again, Phantom X asks him if he's ready to leave, and he's like, no, there's work to do, many children of the world to raise. And in fact, maybe it's best if Phantom X stays away this time.
Yeah. But yeah, so flash forward another decade, and he's sitting on a beach drinking a drink, and mm-hmm. says he's not going to go back.
Yes, and I should also mention, all he's wearing is shorts and his mask.
Yeah, just the mask, but pulled up over his nose so he can, you know, access the straw.
Yes.
Yeah. But
it's
yeah,
it's a good vibe. Just you know, he definitely took it to heart that, you know, maybe he should stay away.
Yeah. And then the next decade, his first line is, I'm going back.
So it lasted about 20 years.
Yeah. So, at this point, you might be getting the pattern. Phantom X hires some people. They go in, immediately get attacked. Phantom X breaks from the group and goes finds his bro and asks him if he wants to leave.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to just be his thing.
Yeah.
Every decade or so. And this decade is no different, except he hires the Humongonauts, which are brand new characters made just for this story, because they are going to die right away. But they're a pretty fun group, actually. I kind of like them. We have Red Eye, Emotipool, Rust Spot, and Mohawk Person.
I did get a laugh out of Mohawk Person.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, and he compares them to, you know, the Defenders, Champions, or even the Thunderbolts, you know. Instead of going to those high-quality groups, he came to them, of course, because that they're better, of course.
Yeah, he saw no one of quality there, but among the Humongonauts, these are the dudes right here.
Oh, yeah. And they, again, make their way inside of the world, and accidentally, Phantom X lets it slip that they're here to be bait while he goes inside. And they do a good job being bait, also dying, unlike the last two groups. So the Humongonauts are no more. Rest in peace.
Yeah, absolutely brought him into just a meat grinder here. I love this collection of dudes that attack him as well. There's mm-hmm. one thing here that just, it looks like a giant toy robot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a giant toy robot with an angry face on it.
It's got, like, the eyebrows, it's great, like, just, like, the slanted mm-hmm. down eyebrows, yeah, like.
You know, there's more, like, robot ships here that almost look like, fish. There's a cat here with a space helmet on with a gun that's just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very good.
It's fun. You know, it's there's a lot of color. It's very vibrant. It's really wonderful. However, this time it looks like they were expected because the Force is waiting for them this time instead of just being snuck up on. And the one of the creatures says, "Organisms, sterile environment breached, world under threat," before they are, of course, attacked, which is apparently also a reference to an earlier Phantom X story that is just brought up here. I didn't write down the issue that was from unfortunately, but it is a reference to something from the past. And as Phantom X runs out from this massive onslaught he was not expecting, you see his twin brother there essentially saying, "Hey, I know what you're doing. I'm you. I've prepared for this. You're like a memory from 100 years ago, and you just need to fade away and stay away."
Yeah. So, another decade passes, and Phantom X is recruiting Wolverine and Cyclops.
Yep, and Cyclops is very drunk. I did want to ask you, Tim, here, because this is a very specific look for Wolverine and Cyclops. Do you know what era that is?
No, I have no clue. I assume probably, like, mid-2000s, but, like, I didn't read comics really around that time.
Okay. Because it does look like that. They both have, like, leather jackets on that are black and yellow. It's a look I've seen before, but I could not place when and where.
Yeah, I want...
This is right before present time, presumably. So it would be fairly recent.
Yeah. This seems like it's probably, like, a decade before recent time. So, yeah. I would not be shocked to see this look in, like, Astonishing X-Men or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I would agree with that.
I couldn't tell you where this is from. But yeah, so Wolverine thinks this is going to give him some clues about where he's from. And that's why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. So this time he just has his team of two with Wolverine and Cyclops to help him. It looks like AIM has taken over the outside of the world as they have set up shop here. But it's pretty easy and quick work for the three of these men to take care of these guys.
Yeah. So, yeah, we mop up AIM, walk in the door, and we're under attack again.
Yep. Looks like it's just some of the massive brain fish ships that are going on here. I feel like also the background changed a little bit. It's still vibrant compared to the rest of it, but the style of buildings is more modern. It might just be because it's very briefly in this one.
Yeah, it's very...
I feel like it's a change.
It looks very undetailed in comparison. Like, everything looks very flat, and you don't really have, like, all the railings and, like, light fixtures and stuff like that from the previous look of it.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom X immediately dips, and he finds his twin in, like, armor with, like, electricity surging around him.
Yes, I have learned that this is Ultimaton, or Ultimaton, hard to pronounce. Also Weapon 15 from the world.
Oh.
He has shown up before and has been a minor villain off to the side in an X-Men book, but that's about it. So having him pop up here was fun to see. And he seems to have lost his sanity a little bit. It's pretty safe to assume that a whole lot of time has passed for him compared to Phantom X. And he mentions that the work of the world is coming to its end, and he's trying to decide whether to build a new version of the world, go beyond it, or maybe to destroy it.
Yeah. And you kind of get this interesting thing where he kind of talks about Phantom X a little bit, and just... I feel like that's kind of the thing here, is he kind of refers to him as, like, a different version of him, like a primal version, and I think that's kind of the appeal for both of them seeing the other, is it's like, this is me, but had I turned out differently? And I think it's very interesting, because the whole experiment was, you know, let's take these different babies and change the chromosome and see if they turn out, but This is that with the same exact chromosomes, and they've turned out radically different.
Yeah. Like, yeah. This is basically what you want in an experiment.
Yeah. Like, this is... at the beginning, they were kind of... it seemed like they were rating nature over nurture, where this seems to be like, no, it's nurture.
Yeah. And I would say Phantom X probably came out on top here, for as weird and strange as he is.
I don't know. This person seems, very, very lived. Had himself quite the life.
I mean, if the end of his life is being able to float with electricity and have a massive spike on his shoes, I suppose that's a life well lived.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're just seeing a snapshot of it. You know, he might have built a robot with an angry face as well. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, that's true. I can't fault him there.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so we get another flash forward, but this is less than a decade. So yeah, I guess what happened here is I bet those costumes are from the mid 2000s. But yeah, so it's modern time now.
Yep, and Phantom X is waiting here with a fellow from AIM named Ned, who is betraying his organization for money. And that's because the mutants are paying. Well, almost paying. But Storm, Monet, and Cypher come through a Krakoan gate to talk to Phantom X because they need his help. A virus has infected Storm, and they believe the only way to get it out of her without killing her is in the world, and they need him to get them in there.
Yeah, it's the virus from Jean Grey and Emma Frost.
Yeah, remember the first Giant Size X-Men issue?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was completely silent and really, really cool.
Yeah.
We're
finally paying that off. But yeah, so we're all going in together. Phantom X, Cypher, Monet, Storm, and this AIM guy.
Mm-hmm. Who, I gotta say, I like Ned. He's very open and honest about what his intentions are, and his intentions are, I just like money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like money.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like me for real.
Yep. Yep. And once more, at the end here, Phantom X introduces the party to the world, where things have gone...
oh, it's gone off the rails.
Very psychedelic. Yeah. It's very cool.
There's like, we got like the
pterodactyl friends are still here.
Yeah, there's a floating castle in the background. There's like a big old crystal, a bunch of upside down heads.
Mm-hmm.
Skyscrapers that are twisting and turning into the skyline off to the side.
Just a
pathway of rocks into the distance.
A giant eyeball. Like it's good stuff.
Yeah. Just the artist having fun and going as wild as he can be.
Yeah. And that is the end of that issue. Very, very excited to see where that pays off later down the line.
Mm-hmm. And thankfully for us, that's immediately.
Whoa, what?
I know, right? Crazy. Yeah. We don't have to wait like a couple of weeks or something to see what happens. We're going to see immediately.
Yeah. So, yeah, we pull up to the last of this series of five giant-sized X-Men with giant-sized Storm here as this... it doesn't pick up directly where we left off here, but it becomes very apparent as this goes on that it's the same story.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. I kind of like what it does. And considering that these are different stories started by different artists and then Hickman had to tie them together, I think it works pretty well. It adds more to the first story and helps continue it along at the same time.
Yeah.
So for this, and it is going to be our last Giant Size X-Men, as after this they are done. This is Giant Size X-Men Storm, titled Disintegration. This is released in September of 2020 and was written by Jonathan Hickman and the artist Russell Dodderman. Mr. Dodderman is an illustrator and character designer who has worked on a bunch of different Marvel projects. You will very likely know their work on The Mighty Thor, which is where Jane Foster became Thor and then ended up into a movie for the Marvel Universe. Work on X-Men, Marauders, and a whole bunch of other stuff. He has helped design character looks for Storm, Thor, Jean Grey, and he has also been the cover artist for every single issue of Marauders that we have read so far.
Okay.
So, very different style to Reese from the last one. His lines are very kind of clean and smooth, where I would say Reese is a lot more like heavy line work. Not quite a sketchbook style, but not like what Dotterman is doing here.
Yeah, it's very distinct, like, art style wise. Like, we're very clearly looking at a different artist.
Yeah, yes. This looks just slicker.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I personally, having, you know, gone through this and especially getting back to this issue here, I really like the way Dotterman draws Storm. There's just a very, very nice, like, confident way he draws her that just kind of comes through in every single panel that I really like.
Honestly, like, just this first panel of just kind of the X as the paneling here, I think is really cool, just as a shout. But I love the bottom panel of this with her fist clenched with all the cyber stuff kind of going around it.
Yes, because we're opening here just kind of as a, hey, just as a reminder, this happened, where Jean is trying to comfort Storm as they discuss the fact that she has been infected by a variant of the techno-organic virus, and they cannot get it out of her. So she's on the time clock and is likely going to die pretty soon unless they figure something out. And yeah, like Tim said, it's a great kind of four triangles here. One is Jean and the rest is different images of Storm. And yeah, one of them is her fist just covered in, like, circuitry-like design that is also just in the background of the page as well.
Yeah. But yeah, so Jean, Storm, and Emma Frost are just having a sit-down where Jean tries to comfort Storm about how we've had all our best people look at this and nobody knows, like, a cure for it.
Yeah. And Emma comes in with a pretty interesting take, even if it's pretty mean. And she's like, well, you know, if you stopped being so dramatic and just died, you know, we could just bring you back and this would never be an issue and you don't have to struggle with it. Which Storm clearly does not want to do because she gets very mad about it.
Yeah. But yeah, as they start to argue, Monet comes in and says, hey, I think I know how to help. And yeah, title page, and we're into the issue.
Yep, and we're actually going to jump to a later point where Cypher and Monet get to a what looks like a nice flat somewhere, and they're debating on how to break in and how to get inside of it. And Cypher's, you know, like, oh, we could do this, but I'm sure the person inside would know. And instead of waiting, Monet just rips the door off.
Yeah.
And inside, we find our friend Ned that we met last time. He is the fellow wearing the full AIM getup, which again is just a yellow hazmat suit, and he's just wearing it while chilling on his couch.
Yeah, just hanging out, just has a blanket on, just in full science gear, glass of wine. How does he drink? Cypher seems confused by this as well.
Yeah, doesn't seem practical, but hey, you want to know what? Ned is a professional. He can't sit around in his pajamas all day, because who does that?
Yeah.
But he says he was expecting someone, just not the two mutants here, which they ask, who are you expecting? And he says, well, the person that is paying me to double-cross my evil science organization, Phantom X, which is how we bring the last issue into this one. As it seems like Phantom X's new plan was to bring Ned to get him to get inside, and he ended up getting roped into what the mutants are doing while he was doing that.
Yeah, so he promised them a bunch of money, can't actually pay it, and is now trying to get the mutants to cover it.
Yeah, you know, no big deal, right? The mutants have their own nation now, they have the money, they could just pay Ned.
This is very funny. He was originally planning on going inside with just him, but was expecting him to die. But with the X-Men here, he's just like, oh, this dude might not die.
Like, yeah, so not having the money was never going to be an issue until the fact that the heroes are coming along.
Yeah. So, yeah, him and Monet debate, and Storm gets pretty mad and just says, please, please, please stop.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah, let's just get on with it.
Yeah.
Yes, stop arguing over money while my life is in the balance.
Yeah, I love this response from Phantom X after Storm is just like, please stop haggling while I'm dying. And Phantom X is just like, so you are paying.
He's like, great, like, that's all I wanted. Yeah. All right, let's move on. So they get up to the world, or the dome that covers the world. And here's where we get a little bit of a background from Ned. And he has several doctorate degrees, you know, before getting drafted into AIM by Shiny Toys and a mail order bride, which he says would have been fine if it wasn't for the fact that he was on the suicide team that was working about trying to figure out the world, which he quickly realized was going to lead to his death. So betraying his organization, easy.
Yeah. Puts a little coin into a wall and it opens up and they're off.
Yes, into this scene that is very, very interesting. Does one of you want to try and describe what they're looking at here?
It is not as interesting as the ones in the previous issue. I feel like this is where the previous issue's art style kind of shown, and this is like a poor imitation of it.
Yeah,
but it's still kind of interesting, I guess.
I like it, but yeah, it's definitely down the level as the last issue. I agree, but yeah, it's a lot of red triangles that are in a fight with some tentacle eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, some triangles, some rhombuses.
Yeah, some there's some weird flying eel things too. And yeah, we're shooting lasers, having a good old time. Looks like the city is kind of destroyed in the background. There's a lot of ruins going on. The world doesn't look like it's doing too well.
No. And I would agree with you
these,
both.
These flying eyeball things, they remind me of Solaces, the Pokemon.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
Which one that is?
Yes,
the
I do.
The one that lives in a like, green bubble?
Yes, they do kind of look like Solaces. Yeah, just the same weird green bubble with something inside of it. The black tentacles are an added, but I also think that would improve Solosis in Pokemon, though.
I don't know what that is. Let me look it up.
They do just kind of look like the eyeballs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? Fair.
Yep.
All right, yeah. So, yep, Cypher's looks like, yep, looks like a battle. Pretty lucky, you know? Little distraction here.
Are you going to say something about the page, Chris?
Oh, yeah, my bad.
Oh, no. I was just going to agree with you both that this is definitely not as psychedelic and, I want to say mind-bending, that's not quite the right word I'm going for, that the last issue an artist did when it came to depictions of the world. But I still like the otherworldly nature of it. Especially all of these diamonds and pyramids going on here, because they're kind of morphing into one another at different points, and it's just very unnerving to look at.
Yeah. But yeah, so Cypher seems happy about the giant battle as a distraction, and asks Phantom X where they're going, and Phantom X says, we're going to the weird shape thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Triangles, Doug seems worried. Storm says it'll be fine, and they're charging in. Very cool panel here. Or page.
Yep.
I like
very
Ned
nice
in the background.
Team shot. Yeah, I do like that. You know, Storm can control the weather. Cypher has his warlock buddy. Monet is just claws. Phantom X, we've seen him. He's capable. Ned just has like a weird science gun.
Yeah.
That's about it. But he's in the team photo, so you know what? I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cypher's got himself like a whole little warlock suit now and can do cool little gun things with it.
Mm-hmm. Which is a little confusing because wasn't it in Giant Size Nightcrawler he was just telling someone, hey, don't tell people that warlock is with me?
Was it the fact that Warlock was with him, or the fact that Warlock can, like, be on his own?
Ooh, that's a good distinction. I don't know.
Because I think people knew that Warlock is, like, on his arm and whatnot. But
okay.
I think it was the fact that, like, Warlock is, you know, still able to, like, walk around on his own is
gotcha.
What people don't know.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because I saw this and I was like, I guess he's just not keeping that quiet.
Yeah.
But if it's that specifically, then that makes a lot more sense.
Also, he is referred to as the mutant version of Bambi by Monet, which is very funny.
Yeah, very funny. And also kind of accurate, but not. Because, yeah, he does seem to be the one who isn't the fighter and can figure things out, but isn't, you know, the one that's going to resort to violence. Even though he seems to be setting up something in the background. You know, we've seen those snippets of him, like him sitting at a table with Krakoa and Warlock all chatting with one another.
Yeah.
So the fact that people see him as like this pure, innocent little being is like really funny because it's accurate, but also there's something underneath. Don't trust Bambi.
Bambi would never.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You see those eyes? Eyes of a killer. But as the fighting is going on, once more, Phantom X bolts and leaves the team, as he is wont to do. But before we can see where he heads off, Storm is going to do her thing and be absolutely incredible, because she realizes in this perfect world, there really is no uncontrollable weather. Meaning, if she can take control of it, she can wreak a whole lot of havoc really, really fast, because these things are not used to the level of a hurricane.
Yeah, or tornadoes.
Mm-hmm. And, oh boy, does she do that.
How does that go for her?
Not super well. She immediately passed out, but...
Yeah, I mean, she is able to summon the tornadoes and cause all of this havoc, but the same circuitry-like design that is growing on her takes over her face, and she passes out. I mean, on the plus side, it did work. All of the weird triangles and eyes are dead, and everybody's good. So they are good, and she does wake back up, even though she's a bit groggy. But they are able to move on, and thankfully, Ned is pretty sure the machine that they need isn't too far away. He says, because this place has the side effect that comes with radical evolution, is that organics and technology end up merging when that sort of environment happens. So if they were going to understand the world, they needed a machine that could separate the organics and the robotic, and that's what they have. So if they can get to that machine, he's pretty sure they can save Storm by putting her in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the same direction that Phantom X ran off to, and they go in just saying, like, we might, you know, run into him, and they see Phantom X chatting with his buddy, with a bunch of AIM people just, dead at their feet.
Very dead. One of them has, like, his head helmet crushed, and there's blood by him.
Yeah.
Like, these guys were massacred.
Phantom X says it's not what it looks like, but we don't really seem that interested in him.
No, we have more important things to worry about, like Storm, who is really not doing too well.
Yeah, so they throw her in the little triangle, and Ned operates the thing.
Yep, they turn it on, and we start to get this inner monologue from Storm here, as she's going to talk about the lingering question that Emma brought up earlier, which is, if mutants now have access to resurrection, why doesn't she just die, get rid of this problem, and then come back like nothing was wrong? And it takes a couple of pages to go through her entire monologue, but essentially she says, what's the value in a life that can just be tossed aside? You know, what is it? Where is the value in not living your life how you want it and to be the person you want to be? So for her to just toss herself aside like that goes against the things that she believes in. But while she is having this monologue, more of these Pokemon eyeball creatures break in, and everybody is trying to fight them off and not doing too well, as Storm, pretty sure she's just going through hell here. She looks like she's in a massive amount of pain.
Yeah, it starts, like, immediately distorting her body, and, like, it looks very painful. Like, there's just, like... there's a lot of lines of her just screaming here, but it's, like, written in, like, scribbled out, like, A's, and it's just all over the page in just, like, very weird patterns. So, yeah, it looks, not fun. But yeah, as the eyeball things are trying to reach her, she blasts a thunderbolt at him and is out of the pyramid, healed up.
Yep, because as she says, I am a mutant, I am a goddess, and I want to live. And now she's doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, shout outs to Dodderman. I love the way Storm looks here. I'm gonna say that forever. I love the way he draws Storm so much. She is wonderful in this art style.
Yep.
Yeah, she looks pretty good.
But the day is saved and the team is good. Cypher says he is not a fan of field work and still feels that way. Monet, Storm owes her a favor for all of this and what she did. And before more conversation can happen, the containment field that Storm went into to be separated from the virus begins to spike, I guess would be the best way to put it, literally, as the virus inside of it is trying to break out. Thankfully, Ned was prepared, and he has some containment foam, that's the best way I could put it, that will make sure it stays in there and does not hit evolutionary critical mass where it can evolve into its own thinking intelligence on its own.
Yep, don't let that thing out.
No. Yep,
better throw the problem-fixing use on it.
Yes, yes.
Put Magneto's key in there.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that too, because once he sprays it, it becomes an orb, like a bluish orb, and there's very clearly a key lock on it. Like, you could put a key in this symbol here.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of hanging out.
I'm sure it's gonna be fine.
Yeah, it'll be okay.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no issue with it.
Phantom X talks to his brother, asks him if he's going to leave. He says, I'm never leaving, and Phantom X says, okay, stay in here then.
That's Phantom X. He's like, all right, I guess I'm going to stay. It took him, 50 years to figure that out?
Yeah.
Something like that?
And Ned also decides to stay and doesn't need the money.
Yes, which I find his entire exchange here amazing, because Storm is on her way out and is like, hey, I don't like you, Ned, but I owe you one, so let's get out of here. And he's like, are you kidding me? Look at this place. It's a massive evil science lab where I can do anything. Of course I'm not going to leave.
Yeah, Storm says I should probably stop you, but like, I'll catch you later, man.
Mm-hmm. I also do like Ned's little tidbit here. He's like, you can do whatever you want with the money, just don't donate it to charity. Just have to keep the little bit of evil as part of the evil scientist there. But I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, so our last line is an epilogue here of Cypher talking to the orb and just being like, hey, you got something to say, right? And says he'll be seeing him. And that's the end of the issue.
Yeah, I find this last little page here, like, really interesting. It's going to be a little bit of a spoiler, I suppose. But we don't have an answer to this at all.
Yeah, I don't think this comes back, yeah.
No, I don't think this ever comes back. This is the last we are going to see of the world and this orb and Phantom X.
Okay, well, throw it in the pile with the rest of unsolved things.
Yeah, it can just...
pretty much.
So it's over there with Nova Roma.
Yeah. But this one's way cooler than Nova Roma, because I feel like this is Hickman trying to plant the seeds of his whole, like, Dominion talk that he had going on in Powers of X.
This is where the no eyebrow villain from New Mutants with her weird animals went.
Yes, they also went into the world and are just hanging out with the orb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah. That is the end of our giant-sized issues. Kind of a mixed bag, in my opinion. I really like the first one. And I do have a soft spot now for the Nightcrawler one, given the artist and what they were going for to be more of like a classic X-Men story. But with this Phantom X one and for Storm, as well as even parts of Magneto, I don't think they hit super well. I don't think they work as well. They're fantastic art showcases. They're very, very pretty. But I think just as stories and as comics, the only one that really works for me is the Jean Grey and Emma Frost one.
Oh, see, I don't quite agree with that. I don't know. Something about the Phantom X one just works for me very well. It's very funny just watching him just like bring dudes in here and run off every single time. I liked the Storm one kind of bringing it all to like a conclusion as well. I don't know. I had fun with these.
Yeah, I think the Phantom X one is stronger than the Storm one. I like the like repeating history aspect of it. I like revisiting the world and seeing how it evolves like only a few pages.
Yeah.
It's fun. And the art style does help a lot because it is very attractive. Not as hot on the Storm one, but it's decent. It's a good conclusion. I was not expecting this to be a conclusion because I did not expect these to be connected in any way.
Yeah, same.
But, you know, I appreciate the effort.
Yeah. It works. And, I agree. I think the Storm one is the weaker of the two, but I don't really dislike either.
Yeah, and if the, you know, if this doesn't ever turn into anything, this, like, cliffhanger here, it's pretty much the same as if the initial Storm virus thing didn't turn into anything either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we kind of ended in the same spot that we were. But, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I disliked any of them. But, you know, they kind of get like a, yeah, that happened.
Yep.
Drug, you know.
I'm probably not going to like, remember any of these.
Yeah.
A year from now. But yeah, let's move on to X-Force.
Yep, we are back on Benjamin Percy's Wild Ride, and it's like we never left. So with X-Force number 11, titled Red Dawn, this was released in August of 2020, and like I just mentioned, was written by Benjamin Percy. Just as a reminder from last time, because it has been a good handful of episodes since we've talked about X-Force, the last time we saw the crew, Jean planned to quit X-Force as she heavily disliked what Beast was doing. Terra Verde was overrun by plant intelligence due to Beast's meddling, and it seems like most of that country is either dead or severely harmed by what happened. Thanks to Jean, Wolverine and... Well, no, Kid Omega was killed. Wolverine was not sacrificed to the plant gods. But, you know, she's gonna leave. And just as an extra aside to even that, part of X-Force is we have the man with the peacock tattoo running around and trying to make all of these super soldiers to kill the mutants and even killed Xavier at one point, as well as the Russians making a lot of problems.
Yeah. Where did they get these bodies? I honestly don't remember. I have to assume this is a couple of issues ago. Because this was not during...
This is from the... this is from the Russian submarine...
Yeah, okay. Yes. That makes... I was like, this was definitely not from Terra Verde. I was like,
no.
Yeah. No. Okay. No, this is... This, yeah, this is the other thing.
This is actually from Wolverine number 3.
Oh, he goes to the...
Yes.
This is where he goes to the secret drug base in the middle of the ocean to find the pale girl.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so Percy is crossing over his two stories that he's got going on, and that's where these guys are from.
Got it. Okay.
Which, speaking of these guys, we're opening up here on Krakoa in the Healing Gardens, where some of the Russian super soldiers that were on the aforementioned massive Russian sea thing are being dissected by the mutants here as they try to find answers as to what exactly is going on and how is Russia able to do this.
Not a lot of healing going on in these healing gardens. Really makes you think.
It really does. Like, it's pretty bad. This is more of just the body garden than anything.
Yeah, we already built one of those next factory.
That's true. We have the boneyard. Why not just take them to the boneyard?
Yeah, I don't know. It's
it is pretty funny how they go, hey, we better not get fooled again by these guys, and then proceed to get fooled again by those guys.
Instantly.
It's really funny. Because, at some point earlier, when they had earlier assassin bodies, their teeth were filled with explosives that really did a lot of damage to the healing gardens. But hey, this time it's okay because they planned for explosives.
Yeah.
Not really horrific Russian doll little meat men.
Yeah, so they cut one open and a smaller man from inside the body reaches out and grabs poor Cecilia's hand. Also, just to kind of set the scene a little bit, it's Cecilia Reyes here standing around with Beast and Sage doing this autopsy.
Yeah, and she's immediately dead.
Yeah, just uh-huh. Yeah. This guy has a knife. Just no, he takes her scalpel and stabs her in the throat with it.
Yeah, and you know, despite being shocked, Beast is just kind of like, "The deeper we dig, the more secrets we find."
Yeah, we should have been looking for more than explosives.
Yeah, it's this little meat man is here.
Yeah,
just a horrific little creature. It's like a person just with no skin. It's just all muscle.
Yeah.
Beast grabs it and just twists its neck around and leaves its body there. And they're like, you know, this is a problem. But, you know, Dr. Reyes is dying. We'll bring her back, whatever. But that little meat man that they killed, a littler meat man comes out and runs away.
It's a Russian nesting doll.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes, of meat men. And Beast and Sage immediately run after the little guy who has the knife, leaving the room full of other bodies to burst open like bodies from Alien as more meat men come out.
Yeah, it's a cacophony of airs here for Beast.
They cannot be this stupid. Like,
yeah,
holy like, shit. Guys, what are we doing here?
Like, Beast, man, come on. Like,
Beast, you're being the CIA. You had to at least truly think there's other bodies.
Oh, that's funny. I was about to say, truly living up to that CIA life.
Yeah.
You know, that's fair. That's also a fair way to look at it. Just, oh my goodness. You know, between this and the last few Wolverines where he's just fighting vampires, I do really like it when Percy's writing, which is kind of more serious, just decides to do something absolutely ridiculous as a concept and run with it.
Yeah, and I really like the kind of the just the way this like plays with how the art looks, because it's like this very like kind of dark and gritty art we got in X-Force. So and you just got these little dudes just coming out of other dudes' bodies. And, like,
yeah, just a little meat gremlin.
Yeah.
Yes. And they've got, like, little knives and everything, and it's gonna get more ridiculous as we keep going. But we are leaving the land of Silly behind for a moment, to go to the Savage Land, where Colossus is now in retirement as he plans to just live a humble farmer's life, because he's tired of the world of violence and really wants to go back to find inner peace.
Yeah, he's just, you know, a humble farmer, plowing the fields, mm-hmm. tending the crops.
Yep, and Domino is really trying to get him to come back, because Russia is clearly behind these assassins that they are sending, especially the one that killed Xavier, and Colossus is from Russia, so she's really trying to get him to come back, be like, hey, the homeland's a problem, we need to help them figure this out, but he's like, no, I really don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, my man saw the blood train and said, I'm out.
Like, you know, fair. Domino doesn't even remember the blood train, so she doesn't even know the horror.
Yeah.
Leave Colossus alone.
Yeah, he's just farming.
Just wants to be a farmer with his nice, beautiful purple girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who doesn't actually have a name yet. But she's purple and has blonde hair and she's very nice.
Yeah, this is our first time seeing this character, but I'm glad Colossus is dating out here.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the dating pool is very large in the Savage Land, so I'm glad he found someone.
Yeah. And we get our first data page, labeled Chapter 1.
Uh-huh.
Yep, and it is...
I didn't know Alan Wake was in X-Men.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much what this is. It's a few paragraphs here about a writer's encounter with a very mysterious and affluent man, who is pretty much going to take the writer and be like, hey, you should do what I want you to do.
Yeah. A voice that was subterranean in its base.
Yeah, great descriptor. I really like that.
Also, he kind of talks about how Once he started making money off his writing, wasn't super interested in a lot of the finer things in life, but did get real into wine and has himself a pretty substantial wine cellar. But yeah,
that will be important later.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. But back to the meat men.
Back to the meat men. We're back at Krakoa at the point at some point. Sage and Beast decided to split up, which was the worst thing you could have done, because instead of Sage being at the helm of all of the security computers and everything, she's been knocked out, and a tiny meat man is sitting in her chair looking up where Xavier is.
Yeah, it's just a little dot with Xavier's face on it. Just meat man's got it. Knows the target's location.
Yep. We have found what they're looking for, and they are looking for Xavier again.
Yeah.
And we're going to cut back to Colossus in the Savage Land as the multiple men, as we've met him before, are leaving the Savage Land and are heading back through the gate pretty suddenly. And Colossus is pretty astute to notice that this probably means there's an issue going on. Especially as one of the multiple men is shot back through the gate by a bunch of bullets.
Yeah. Also, we do get her name here. It's Kayla.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I missed that. I'm glad you caught it.
Yeah. It has been like a couple of weeks since I read this issue, so I actually did not remember that. But yeah. So she has been named. Colossus hands her his bag of petals and rushes off to go help.
Yep.
Just he when he bodies up. Out, they pull him back in.
They pull him back in with what? Little meat men.
Yeah.
And he goes through the gate, and all hell has broken loose. You have Cyclops, and Storm, and Jubilee, and Domino, and everybody trying to fight the Meat Men because they found Forge's armory, and they have a flamethrower, and guns, and one of them has a giant plant mech.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we kind of get just to pull it back a little bit, we get a monologue here from Colossus talking about how... he likes farming because it gives him some, like, order. Like, he kind of knows how it's going to go. And with the X-Men, it's just chaos. And as he's saying the line about it being chaos, we go into the scene with the meat men in Forge's armory just going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You should stay in the farm, then.
Yeah, yes.
Just walk back through the gate.
Yeah, just leave this. There's one little meat dude with, like, a big gun.
Yeah, I love this little guy because it shows you how ridiculous this rushing nesting doll thing is. Because Colossus steps on the little guy, keeps walking, and the little guy pops out yet another smaller guy.
Yeah.
It's nonstop.
Yeah, the Beast really, really messed this up.
Yes, he did. He really did. But thankfully, Beast is also still really strong and very acrobatic. I sometimes forget this about him, considering he's not that often in the field in Krakoa, but he's able to get on top of this plant mech and basically disable it, as he's talking about how, yes, there is a lot of chaos and mayhem, but that's probably just a distraction for whatever they're actually after, and we really need to figure out what that is.
Yeah. And Black Tom makes it to him right as a meat man has also done so.
Yes, Black Tom is not going to make the same mistake twice, and he immediately finds Xavier and gets him into this really cool, like, plant root, tree root kind of ball, protective ball, and he just completely seals it away from everything else and brings it under the island.
Yeah. But then we kind of see what the meat men seem to actually be after, which is the Cerebro Sword?
Yes, that is correct. That is from X-Force number 2.
Yeah.
It is the Cerebro that Xavier was shot in during the first issue, and then Magneto turned it into a sword in a very cool monologue that he was giving. But yeah, it looks like that is what they're here for, because the little meat man just grabs it, and we're going to see, he takes it. That's what they were here for.
Yep. Magneto should have probably turned that into a, like, really awkward and heavy to carry rock instead.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe it's not something so easily picked up by a tiny creature.
Uh-huh.
But besides that, we're going to take a break with another data page. This is a follow-up to the first one, as this is chapter two. And the powerful man with the subterranean voice tells the writer that he should use his powers of writing for Russia. Why not use it for the motherland and help fight the good fight? But the writer declines, saying that is really not what he wants to do, although that seems to not matter, as the man who cornered him was not looking for a no.
Yeah. There's a little interesting bit here where he says, like, you must recognize your superiority because you're a mutant. And he makes a note about how he's not superior. And then as that happens, the person takes all of the labels off the wine bottles. The writer panics, falls to his knees saying no, and he says, oh, I guess you do believe in superiority. Just a very funny way to make a point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just gonna ruin all of your wine.
Yeah.
Well, not even the wine, just the bottles.
No, I like, now you don't know which one is which. I could see that being very frustrating. Like,
yeah, especially if that was your thing.
Yeah.
So again, at the end of this, there is a word in Russian. It does say chronicler, which we've had appear a couple of times now in X-Force. And we'll continue to see, actually.
Yeah. Back at the nesting doll fight.
Yep. The battle rages as Domino is just using an assault rifle to shoot these little guys. And she's running out of bullets. There's only so many times you can shoot them, and they keep popping back up.
Yeah, Beast kind of starts hitting the conclusion that these people know exactly what they're doing. Like, they know what to go for. They know how to, like, mess up our defenses.
Yeah, they knew how to stop the defenses. They knew how to get to Forge's armory. There has to be something more going on here.
Yeah.
But the day seems to be pretty well saved, and Colossus, you know, just kind of quietly shuffles off back through the portal. He really does not want to be there, but did what he had to do.
Yeah. And yeah, day's clear, and Quentin managed to stay out of it and is just having a little rendezvous with Phoebe of the Cuckoos here.
Yep. Somehow they are still dating Kid Omega. I don't know what they see in him. It's not great.
Yeah.
But, you know, the two of them not so inconspicuously climb out of a bush.
Yeah. And then,
and
there's also there's this note here specifically about, like, this is kind of different from their relationship with Cable, because in that case, it's like all five of them are dating him. But in this case, it seems like Kid Omega is specifically just dating Phoebe.
Yes.
Yeah.
How that works, I'm not sure. But
yeah.
Yeah, which is very interesting. And yeah, I also don't know really how it works. But yeah, very interesting. So yeah, Quentin is very happy. He's had a wonderful evening. And unfortunately for him, we're going to keep the streak going because he's going to die yet again. He gets stabbed in the back with the Cerebro Sword, even though he has had this wonderful day. And after he is stabbed, he is pushed through the Krakoan Gate over into Moscow.
I love this bit so much. Him just getting stabbed and his reaction is not again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like, it's very funny. Like, are you kidding me?
I'm gonna take that.
Yeah.
That's a win for me, personally.
Yeah.
I'm
glad you got the win.
I like this bit a lot of Kid Omega just constantly dying.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's arguably the strongest member of X-Force. But he cannot stay alive to save his life.
Yeah.
Get it? Aha.
But yeah, he's in Moscow, and the sword is yanked out of him by a tall man in a cape. Have we seen this man yet?
We have not seen this man yet. This is a new man.
No, I don't think so.
I believe he's shown up in comics before. Do you know who this is?
I do know who this is. But the next issue of X-Force is going to tell us who this man is, so I'm okay with leaving it as a question.
I will not do that. I think we should go ahead and name him, just because, like, it's an established character.
Like, that's fine. Go right ahead.
This is Mikhail Rasputin, Colossus's older brother.
Yes.
Oh.
Also, Magic's older brother.
Okay. Wait, who?
Magic. Because they're all related.
Oh.
That's our dude. Pulls out the sword, and we will be picking this up next time in X-Force 12.
Is this the X of Swords?
It could be related the X of Swords. We're getting close.
Yes, this issue is tagged as the Road to X of Swords. Yeah. If it is or is not the X of Swords, I mean, we're going to see pretty soon, actually. We're getting very close to the start of the event.
Yeah, so...
There is an X in the pommel of the sword.
Yeah.
There is.
It's like X-shaped.
So our next set of issues are going to be X-Force number 12, and then I believe Excalibur number 11 and 12?
Yes, that is correct.
And that will be our last batch of issues before X of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Yep. Then after that, we have a whole lot of X of Swords, because it is a rather large event for X-Men.
Yeah, this is our big major event. We get a few of these as it goes on, but this is like our first one. We might take a little bit of a detour here. Me and Sergio have been watching X-Men 97, have been finding it quite enjoyable, and we want to talk about it. We're trying to convince Chris to watch it. I think we did it.
Yes.
I was going to say, I don't think it's a try. I think it is a, you have. I'm absolutely going to start watching it soon. The current working plan is we're going to break the season in half. So we're going to talk about 5 episodes and then talk about the last 5 afterwards after they come out. Sure when those episodes are going to come out just yet because, I need to watch them and then we need to see how schedules work out. But we are absolutely going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I'm excited about it. It's very good content.
Yeah.
Good X-Men content.
Yeah.
It's rarer than one would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sergio has been bursting at the seams and has been asking me a lot, been like, have you watched it yet? Are you going to watch it yet? I'm like, you know what? Yes.
Yes. I really do like it. Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
It is quite good.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to watch it. So I can't wait.
Yeah, so I don't think that'll be next time, but it could be. So just stay tuned to our socials, and we'll keep you updated on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will come out sometime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, speaking of socials, we are at the end of this current reading order that has been posted on our social media. I have already made the next reading order graphic, and I will be putting that up shortly after this episode comes out, so you can see what we're going to be reading coming up. Tim already said for episode 38 what we're doing, but you can also see the rest of the layout for X of Swords.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to find us on the social medias to follow and see what we're reading when we're going to come out with those X-Men 97 episodes, you can find the podcast at Study of X. You can find that on X, also known as Twitter. You can find it on Tumblr. You can also find it on Blue Sky, although it is not as active there just yet. There's no way to pre-create posts yet and schedule them on Blue Sky, so it's been a lot more difficult. But it is there, too, if you wanted to follow it. And if you had any questions, comments, what you thought of Kid Omega, or if you had a favorite giant-size X-Men, really, you can send us an email at studyofx@gmail.com, and we might just read it here on the podcast. If you are looking for us individually, I believe I'm still the only one with a social media account currently. You can find me at Sawneeks, that is Sawneeks, on Blue Sky. I post there every now and again, really not a whole bunch, but if you need to send me a message for whatever reason, I am there. And for you, Sergio, are you still lost in the wastelands of no social media?
Yeah, you should probably assume I'm gonna stay that way for a while.
Yeah, it's great, it's right?
A good life.
Yeah.
It is a good life.
Yeah. I don't know, there's something freeing about it.
I know.
Sometimes I go back and check on Twitter, and it's like walking into the world.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
That's just like Phantom X opening the door and showing me in, and like the weird googly eye robots are in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope, I'm good, actually.
Yeah, just walk out. We don't want land rights or looting rights or whatever the heck Sebastian was getting. You know, just side note, very fun to see the Hellfire Club get just like punked out like that. It's very, very funny. That's our episode. Please rate and review us on Apple, by the way, just iTunes podcast or just wherever you want. But specifically that one, I don't know, that seems to be the good one. So it helps us.
It seems to be the important one.
Yeah.
That people look at. If you liked it, please leave a review. If you didn't like it, you can still leave a review, but it would hurt Tim's feelings if you did that.
No. You can leave a review, and it could be very mean, but just make sure it says 5 stars. That's...
Oh, yes. Okay.
That's the real important part. It just helps us get our name out there a bit. Thank you in advance, because I know you're doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so... That's, I believe, is all we got.
Yep. I believe that is it for today. So until next time, later, mutants.
Bye.